So these are the three things that I think you should know about today. Think about this. Number one, protests in three Asian countries that align with China and all are somehow mysteriously similar, right? I'm going to tell you what I think is going on here. A man once called a terrorist, a wanted terrorist, becomes president of Syria, and he meets with a U.S. general who's worried about his sleep.
Are you getting enough sleep? Your many fans, and I am one of them, we do have worries.
Isn't that weird? Anyway, is there anything that Europe won't blame on Russia? Did it rain somewhere today? Maybe a thunderstorm? Thanks, Putin. The latest, an airport shutdown in Denmark. And who do you think they're blaming? You got it. It's crazy, but it has to be Russia, which is why we're giving this the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. All right, here we go. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Once again, we begin our show with a duck. Because, as I like to say, yes, when it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, you know what it is? It's usually a duck. The quacking that I'm referring to are actually protests in this case. First, there was the unrest that broke out in Nepal. Remember this? We covered it. We went live with this. We were told it was a Gen Z protest, mostly originated as a social media thing. The people were angry at their government and they attacked them. I thought it was kind of weird when I was reporting on it, but, you know, hey, whatever. Things happen, weird things. But then there was another protest, very similar protest to that one, also had broken out earlier. This one's in Indonesia. And we also learned that it had many of the same characteristics. So we're starting to see a pattern, right? Students, Gen Z, social media driven, and they even flew that same flag again. Now let's go to the Philippines. Guess what? Same thing, more of the same, same pattern. It persists. Shouldn't they at least try to maybe change it up a little bit, right? Do they think, what, we're stupid? There's that so-called one-piece flag again. It's called the Manga Pirate Flag. Wow, what a coincidence. Three different countries, all far apart from one another. The people more or less around the same time, same age, all decide to do the same thing for the same reason, in the same manner, waving the same flag. And they're coming out to break stuff and attack people because they all suspect the same thing, that certain politicians are corrupt. Really? Let me tell you what this looks like. Remember the Arab Spring back in 2010? Young people in one Arab country after another took to the streets to protest corruption. Wow, what a coincidence, right? See, back then I bought it, and a lot of people did, hook, line, and sinker. Back then, until I found out years later that it was all fomented by Washington. And here's the New York Times story. Here's the article that proves it. Notice how they use a euphemism, though. They use nurtured the Arab Spring. In other words, they planned it, they paid off to make it happen, they organized it, they orchestrated it, they fomented it. You get it. Western intel agencies have been doing this kind of stuff for decades. And why do we keep getting fooled? Well, here's what they did back then, because we've done some digging into this. They created a youth alliance. That's what they called it, where they trained young people, hint, young people, at the behest of Western intel agencies. The State Department went as far as to bring in young Arabs, mostly Egyptians at the time. They flew them into New York, where they trained them on how to use social networking and mobile technologies to promote democracy. By the way, let's stop right there. So what do they mean by democracy? Democracy means, in that context, to overthrow their governments, in case you were wondering. And who sponsored the event? The U.S. State Department, along with Google and Facebook and PepsiCo and MTV and the Columbia Law School. Now, is there an ironclad connection between the protesters and their Western promoters in this most recent case that I've been telling you about? No. To be fair, we looked into it and we did not find direct ties to NGOs. But then again, it took several years for the truth to come out about the Arab Spring as well. And that was likely done at the behest of Israel. This time, think about it. All of these countries involved, right? What do they have in common? Indonesia, Philippines, Nepal. They all have governments that happen to have friendly relations with China. Or as Mr. Trump would say, China. Is that the real reason that somebody wants them overthrown? And who is that somebody? Like I said, I cannot, at this point, definitively answer that question in the affirmative. But after decades of practicing my craft as a journalist, just because I can't say it's a duck doesn't mean that I can't report what it looks like and what it quacks like. All right, I'm about to show you something else now. I'm about to show you something that is going to blow your mind, and it's why I have a policy on this show and in general that I don't write when I prepare my material, my copy. I don't use loaded words like regime. Don't like that word. Dictator or terrorist. You know why? Because, look, I've come to realize that a regime is simply a government that somebody doesn't like. A dictator is a president or a prime minister that somebody doesn't agree with, and a terrorist is whatever the hell or whoever the hell you want it to be as long as it suits your purpose. Take the case of Abu Mohammed al-Jolani. Here he is, designated as a global terrorist by the United States of America, the U.S. State Department, 2013. They thought he was so dangerous, they put a bounty on his head for $10 million. So that's when we needed him to be a terrorist. We, the United States of America, needed that dude to be a terrorist. Today, we do not need him to be a terrorist, so we changed his title. His new title, Mr. President. I ain't kidding. That's right. The terrorist is now the leader of Syria, and here is the American general who took him on at one time. Lost the war in Iraq, by the way, this general, and is now truly concerned, he says, about this former terrorist's... Can you be a former terrorist? Anyway, he's worried about this guy's health and his sleep patterns.
So this next one is about you personally. How are you holding up under all this pressure? Are you getting time to do some thinking? Are you getting enough sleep at night? Again, I've been there, and it is so very, very hard. And your many fans, and I am one of them, we do have worries.
Are you kidding me? Oh my God, I'm your biggest fan. Who is this, Elvis Presley? I'm very worried about your sleep. Is this a Fellini movie? What the hell am I watching? I mean, I'm quoting my colleague Glenn Greenwald here when he says, imagine now that you're one of the thousands of Americans who were told by your government and by General David Petraeus, that man right there, to go to Iraq, risk your life, go to Afghanistan, go to Syria, to catch or kill this guy and others like him because they are al-Qaeda. And now you turn on the TV and you see your commander welcoming the guy you were told to kill, this longtime al-Qaeda leader, to your own country while he worries about how well he's sleeping. I mean, really? You know, I got to tell you something. When I watched that, the first thing I did, my fingers, you know how we like to Google stuff. I went right to the Googles, and I started thinking to myself, what's the condition of the U.S. soldiers today in America who fought in those wars? Let me tell you what I learned. At no time in the history of the United States of America have U.S. combat veterans been committing more suicides, killing themselves, than those who served in those wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is chilling. Three times more are killing themselves after they come home from those wars than actually died fighting in those wars. Three times. According to their psychologist and according to the reports I read this morning, they feel confused, they feel betrayed, they feel traumatized. I'm sorry if this is a cheap shot, but I can't help but wonder if General Petraeus is as worried about how those guys are sleeping at night. You know who loves General Petraeus? Oh, my God. I remember when I used to work there. They loved having this guy on. The bookers, the people who get him on, love this guy. CNN. They have Petraeus on all the time. He's like a regular, right? They're their fan base, right? And when they put him on the air, you know what they never tell you about him? They never tell you that he makes millions of dollars working for security firms who profit from wars while they have him on to promote more wars. They never tell you he lost the war in Iraq, by the way. At CNN, there's no such thing as a bad war. In fact, look at what happens when a guest, who I happen to like, by the way, I think she's solid, dared to suggest on CNN, they probably won't invite her back, that we should not continue to cut Social Security and other social services while continuing to give trillions of dollars to Israel and Ukraine and to fight endless and useless wars. She says this, right? And they go after her. I mean, watch the reaction. Look how they gang up on her.
Honestly, these foreign conflicts have a lot more to do with our national debt the as opposed they do, to us paying into our Social Security.
Do you think Israel is a bigger portion of our budget than Social Security, Medicare,
I think we spend way too much money on military aid for foreign countries.
You think
Absolutely.
Israel is more
do
than
you
Social
think
Security?
That Social Security is more of an issue compared to how much money we just shell out for conflicts abroad?
As a matter of expenditures and math, yes.
Both entitlements and defense are a big issue.
It's like they're making fun of her. It's like the only place in America where you're allowed to make fun of a woman is when she's on the air criticizing Israel. And she's just dumb. What does she know, right? I mean, of course we need to give more money over there, and wars are good, and it's like, as I watched that, I thought to myself, who are these people? And why are they ganging up on this person for saying something Jesus would have said? Or Gandhi, or any other spiritual leader of our lives, in our lifetime, or be before us. It's crazy to watch that. And how did a country like the United States, my country, become the place where news outlets are completely beholden to the administrative state's whims? They push wars, and the corporate media says, "Aye, aye, sir. Whatever you say, sir." Speaking of Petraeus. I mean, they sell the bombing campaigns one on top of another like they're pancakes, you know? And they're all based on lies. After Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Iran recently, Ukraine. Now, there's Russia in this last week. Have you seen what's going on this week? Yeah, that's right, Russia. NATO and European countries are warning Russia, threatening Russia, and it's not because of anything that I have been able to find as a journalist, and trust me, I would report it to you. Not because of anything that's actualized that Russia has done, it's because of what they say that Russia has done. Facts, evidence, be damned, not necessary. Look at this report. I just found this before going on the air, and I was just doing a little, you know, Googling again, and it crossed a few hours ago, and I caught it, and I said, told my team, put this up, I want to talk about it, right? This is a Danish report. A Danish airport had to be shut down for some security reasons. Now, it could be birds on the runway. It could be some kid flying a drone to make a movie for his class project. It could be a lot of things. But look at how they present the story. Quote, the Danish PM cannot rule out Russian involvement. He cannot rule out Russia. He probably also can't rule out Martians or green monkeys coming out of his orifice. I don't know, but I don't see them writing headlines about the other stuff they can't rule out. I mean, what kind of crazy logic is this when you think about it, right? And look at this, because this is where it also gets interesting. Look at the story. Let me read on to you a little bit. Watch how they prove something that hasn't happened by alleging three other things that haven't been proven. Quoting the PM once again. We have seen drones over Poland. Well, that's in question. That should not have been there. We have seen activity in Romania. what activity? We have seen violations of Estonian airspace. This is a serious attack on critical Danish airspace. I mean, can you believe this? None of the things he said have been actually substantiated. And if they are, by the way, Russia should then be investigated for them. But they're all accusations. It's like he's saying, if E doesn't equal C and it doesn't equal G, then B must equal D. Like, what? By the way, when they do eventually find out that it was a false alarm caused by some kid flying a kite, and that's why the security went off at the airport, you think they're going to retract it? You think they're going to apologize? Generally, no. But when it comes to Russia, hell no. There's a lot to unpack. So, all right. And you know what? I am so excited. Guess who we have on the show today? I've been wanting to get this guy here because I see this guy every morning. You know, he's one of those guys I wake up to. I go for a jog. I go do exercise. I might play golf. Whatever I do, I have George Galloway with me because he's in my ear as I'm listening to his podcast, which I think happens to be one of the best podcasts in the world right now. It is the mother of all podcasts. We're going to be right back with none other than George Galloway. Oh, yeah, by the way, he used to be a British MP. We'll be right back. You know, every once in a while, you run across somebody in your life who makes an impact on you. They make an impact because there's something about them. And, you know, there's people who are smart, and it comes from that. And that's important. And I've introduced you to a lot of people on this show who bring that. And it's certainly a very valuable thing. We had somebody on the show yesterday who was able to do that, and Dr. Doctoroff, Gilbert Doctoroff, brilliant man. But the guy sitting to my right is George Galloway. And I just have to tell you, from the moment I met this man, I knew there was something special, not only because I think he's one of the most intelligent and well-read people I know, but also because there's something about his heart that stands out above seemingly a lot of others, you know, which makes you different. And I respect you so much and admire you so much for your stances, for your heart and for your soul and for the things that come out of here as well as the things that come out of here. It's most such kind. A pleasure to have you here with me.
It's wonderful to see you here. We had such great times together when you were back in the U.S.
Yeah.
And to see you here in all your glory with this amazing show, which people are clocking on to all over the world, really all over the world. I mean, the Sanchez effect is definitely seismic.
That's so nice of you to say that. And, you know, in many ways, isn't it funny? Because much of what I go through in terms of gathering material comes in many ways from many people, but you're one of them. I think I mentioned a little while ago, and if I hadn't, I will do it again. I wake up in the morning, I immediately go on my phone, and I go, and I could show it to folks, right to your podcast, to see what's in your head on this day. Mm. And, you know, 90% of the time, I agree with you. The other 10%, I think you're full of crap. But but you're one of those guys who I like to see what you're thinking about, what you're talking about. And it helps us in all. I think there's a group of us in this world who kind of like to see what other people are like. And I like to choose people who I respect. So I respect you a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Well, we're trying to do God's work. We'll not know until the judgment day whether we were estimating God's intentions correctly. But if we're fighting for peace and to avoid war and bloodshed, it seems to me we're on the right track. The world is full of people who are either proselytizing, shilling for more war, more bloodshed, or in office actually carrying it out.
What? I study you in many ways. And one of the things that I've noticed is you are really working your butt off. Mm. You are putting out a lot of material. I can tell that you're not just putting it out to put it out.
No.
You're working that material. You're researching. You're writing. You're one of the good ones in that sense, because you know how important it is, the words that come out of your mouth.
Exactly. I mean, I'm a believer. I think that it's my duty to do it. By the grace of God, I still have the health to do it. I'm not young anymore, but my mind is young. And I'm up in the morning like spring. As you know, I'm a lifelong teetotaler. I don't drink alcohol. So I've always been up before everyone else. And with three young children at home and another two young children in their mother's home, I feel I've got an obligation to try and save the world from cataclysm.
Is that what moves you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to make a difference?
I really want to make a difference. And the bigger my audience grows, and you're finding that now with this show, the more your audience grows, the more your responsibility, of course, to get it right and to say it well, to know our song and sing it well, as Bob Dylan put it. But to try to avoid catastrophe. I mean, I honestly believe that a hard rain is going to fall if we're not careful. And that hard rain will consume our children and their children. And I have six children, five grandchildren, and five of my kids are too young to reproduce. So there's going to be a lot of us if the world survives.
Me too. I have a granddaughter now. I don't know. I think I may have mentioned it to you in one of our texts or something.
Changes your life.
It does change your life. Yeah. There's another generation now.
Exactly.
You know?
We are living in a world that's the most perilous that we have known since the Cuban Missile Crisis. And in fact, there are now multiple Cuban Missile Crises. We could have World War III in the Persian Gulf. We could have it in the Ukraine. We could have it over Israel-Palestine in the Levant. We could have it in the South China Sea over Taiwan. I mean, there's never been a time where there have been existential threats in this number.
Is there a difference between guys like you and me and the guys who are pushing these wars? I'm not better than anybody. I'm a sinner. I'm a very imperfect person. I screw up a lot. But I know deep down that I would have a hard time looking at myself in the mirror if I was trying to start a war to make money off it that I knew was killing a lot of people. I don't understand how the Israeli government, these people can look in their own mirrors or go to sleep at night.
I doubt they look in the mirror, but some of them are hardened fanatics. And there are people in life that are so extreme, so fanatic, that all other matters and everybody else's interests are simply not present on their radar.
Really?
But there are others who, I think, cynically manipulate the tensions that are there in the world. There's always been tensions in the world. I talked about the Cuban Missile Crisis. But to cynically manipulate them in the hope of gaining an advantage, gaining a market advantage, the zero-sum game, if you get an advantage, someone else has got a disadvantage. That's the majority of our rulers, I think. Netanyahu and his gang, they're in a different league. I mean, they are messianic fanatics that would be ready to see the world come to an end. They almost wish to hasten the end of times. And you have them in your country in some considerable number, these fanatic evangelists who would quite like Armageddon to come along quite sometime soon while they're still here.
They're starting to, speaking of Petraeus, who I was talking about earlier, some of them, though, you know, George, are starting to cut and run. Remember that famous phrase? Indeed. They're not comfortable anymore with the fact that their ministers were bought off by Israel to convince them that they have to protect Israel. And guys like Tucker and many others, Napolitano and Daniel Davis and Mearsheimer and a lot of the people you and I both know very well are coming out and saying to the American people, wake up. This has nothing to do with this. And I'm seeing a somewhat of an awakening. Not fully vested yet, but somewhat. Do you?
For sure. And many that you didn't mention, even Steve Bannon, the keeper of the true blue flame of MAGA, Candace Owens, maybe even, God rest his soul, Charlie Kirk.
Yes.
People are beginning to open their eyes, beginning to see what they could not see before. And indeed traduced us for seeing before they did. But they are, and I think that's therefore a moment of great danger. And it certainly turned out to be fatal in Charlie Kirk's case. And I'm worried about Tucker. I'm in touch with Tucker, as you are. He's the preeminent broadcaster, even greater than you and me. Mm-hmm. He's saying things.
And a good soul.
Very good soul. And he said things at the Charlie Kirk memorial at the weekend that have driven a lot of people crazy. And crazy people do crazy things.
Well, you know, they say the thing that really got Israel's ire about Charlie Kirk was Charlie inviting Tucker to his Turning Point USA in Tampa, where Tucker went off and said that Epstein was, in fact, tied to Israel, and he got a standing ovation.
Indeed.
And that's when, according to the reporting by Max Blumenthal, he was called to New York and literally given a tongue lash.
Yeah, I mean, Max,
just before he was killed.
Days before. I mean, there's a man, believe it or not, aptly named called Shillman, who is outed by Max Blumenthal today as having pooled his financial contributions to Charlie Kirk's organization 3 days before Charlie was killed in protest at Charlie's recent and only partial realization that everything was not as he had previously been told or as he had previously believed. So there's a lot more of this story, I think, still to come out. But the fact that MAGA has fractured along these lines is a matter of some concern. So far, doesn't seem to have reached the White House, doesn't seem to have reached Donald Trump, but I'd be surprised if he's not concerned about it. If he's not taking his vanguard with him, then what future is there for his political movement?
Do you think he is?
I think he is, but I may be overestimating him. It may be that Donald Trump is just a showman, just a frontman, and would have been just as comfortable fronting for someone else for something else entirely. But I still believe in my heart that Trump was that human hand grenade that the working class in America threw into the political system.
Yes.
To blow it up for them. I still, in my heart, believe that Trump had some good intentions towards Russia, Ukraine, for example.
I agree.
I still believe that Trump would like to bring that war to an end, doesn't want World War III, at least not here. But who knows? It depends which Donald Trump you're listening to.
I was talking to Tucker. In fact, he was there. My wife, Suzanne, was there. And we were just shooting the proverbial you-know-what breeze. And he said that, you know, Rick, he said, in the end, Mr. Trump is the right answer for America now, but the better answer will be JD for many, many reasons. Mm. And he gave me reasons, which I don't think I should say on the air to respect my relationship with Tucker. But yesterday, I had Dr. Doktorov on, Gilbert Doktorov, who you know.
Yeah.
Brilliant guy, lives in Brussels, European dude like you. Mm-hmm. And he said the biggest way, the best protection for Donald Trump is J.D. Vance. Mm. Because the really bad guys, the neocons, the interventionists, they don't want J.D. Vance in office. They'd prefer to have Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
Well, that's possible. First of all, Vance is much younger and has a longer political lifespan in front of him. He has clearer thinking. Trump can be all over the place.
Yes.
Entirely contradictory often. Whereas Vance has a more consistent point of view. I don't want to disrespect the American president, but I think Vance is smarter. He may not be as street smart as Donald Trump, but he's learned. I mean, I read his hillbilly elegy a long time ago now, and I was very, very impressed. And Vance is like me, maybe like you, a good Roman Catholic. He is cognizant of the church's teaching on just war and the rest. And so, frankly, I'd prefer J.D. Vance in the White House than Donald Trump.
Yeah, yeah. En nombre del Padre, el Hijo y el Espíritu Santo. when he says Russia was provoked into a war by NATO and the United States and Obama and Biden, when Vance says that, I think he totally buys into it, understands it, and is willing to act on it. Mm-hmm. When I hear Trump somewhat intimate that, I'm not sure it's the same.
Well, you're certainly not sure he's going to feel that way tomorrow morning when he wakes up.
Right.
Oscar Wilde had that great aphorism that someone he was disparaging bore the impression, like a sofa, bore the impression of the last person to sit on them. Now, I'm not suggesting anyone's sitting on Donald Trump, just for the avoidance of doubt, but I really do think it's true. The last person in Donald Trump's ear will hear what they said, repeat it by Donald Trump, whereas Vance got his own ideas, I think.
But we're not seeing him yet.
No.
He's not going to be disrespectful to Donald Trump.
He's loyal, but sometimes I try and read something into his enigmatic smile.
I do that, too.
I hope I'm right about it. No, I think that Vance would be a steadier hand on the tiller. But if Donald Trump's not careful, he's going to blow his whole legacy. He's going to blow any possibility of a dynasty of his making.
For what? For his friendship with Bibi?
Well, one doesn't know.
I mean,
what's in the Epstein files? That's what we don't know and can't know. But on the face of it, Trump seems to be compromised by the Epstein affair. Mm. Epstein and he were as close as can be, and for a very long time. And hey, you know, do bears defecate in the woods? Is the Pope a Catholic? Did Donald Trump like young girls? Mm. The likely answer is yes. And Epstein was the source of young girls, even underage girls. I'm not suggesting Trump went down the rabbit hole that deeply, but I've no doubt.
We don't know.
No, we don't know. And I've no doubt that evidence exists that has compromised. Because there's no other explanation.
But it has to be so unsurvivable, George. Pardon me for interrupting you, of course. But it has to be so unsurvivable, because what hasn't this guy already survived and gone through? His whole life has been put out there, and much of it would be very embarrassing for guys like you and me, and he just walks through it like he's walking through coals.
He does, but there are some things that are not survivable.
Of course.
The age of the girls is an unsurvivable thing. The evident duress of the girls, the numbers of the girls.
Yeah.
You know, you can
specific
easily,
activities that somebody might have video of.
We can't go into on television, but there may be things, and the dramatic U-turn that he made. One day he's campaigning to release the Epstein files, hold the criminals, lock them up, and the next minute, what Epstein files? There are no Epstein files. It's all a hoax.
But even if they're there, I need to go down this rabbit hole now because you're taking us there. But let us suppose that what Tucker said recently is true, and the people who have the keys to the Epstein information about Donald Trump reside in Israel. Mm-hmm. And one of them may even be named Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. Would that be enough to make sure that Israel gets everything it ever wants from the Trump administration?
Well, so far, that appears to be true. Netanyahu is in Washington, in New York. This is his fourth visit in 8 months. So whatever it is Trump and Netanyahu have got going on, it's up close and personal. You know, it's not a long-distance telephone romance.
Right.
It's something that demands a lot of face time. And I personally believe that they whispered in Donald Trump's ear at the key moment of the about face and said, you don't want to go there because there's material in there that will really finish you. Donald Trump campaigned on the last day of the election in Michigan as the peace campaigner.
Yeah.
I'm going to halt this. Yeah. I'm going to stop this carnage in Gaza.
He hasn't.
And he's armed it, funded it, shilled for it, diplomatically protected it in the United Nations. Sole vote, USA, hand up, veto, no ceasefire. even though the terms of the resolution give Israel everything they say they are demanding in return for an end to the war. Still, the U.S. blocked it.
Let me ask you about something that I'm sure affects you the same way it affects me. I have a lot of Jewish friends. You have a lot of Jewish friends. You have a lot of Israeli friends, I'm sure, people who've lived in Israel and have become friends with you over the years. Do you fear for them and what's going to happen to them, their country, when this is all said and done? I can't see how this can end up well for Israel in the end.
No, and indeed, Netanyahu was giving a speech just last week that I thought was new departure for him. He said, we're going to have to get used to the fact that the rest of the world is against us. We're going to have to become a Sparta. In fact, they've always been a Sparta, but he said super Sparta.
Interesting.
We're going to have to rely on ourselves. Basically, the Samson option.
He said that?
Yeah, that we... He didn't say, we're going to bring the temple down on our own heads and kill everybody else. Mm-hmm. But he could well have been inferred to have been saying that. Mm. He basically said, it's us against the world. He's right about that.
Yeah.
But what kind of country would that be to live in? I mean, you say I had Israeli friends. I had many. But they've all left Israel. Yeah. They're all living in Lisbon or France.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing, too. There's a huge...
The best people, at least the best people I ever knew, have long left Israel. There are still some... holdouts around the newspaper Haaretz and so on.
But don't we need people in Israel to fight him?
We kind of, but you're asking a lot of someone to live in what is a psychotic super Sparta, where the constant frenzy is to dehumanize the people that you are killing.
It's horrible.
To refuse to empathize with them.
Yeah.
This whole shtick about there are no innocents in Gaza. Children will grow up to become terrorists, so we might as well kill them. While the mothers will go on, women will go on to have children, so we might as well kill them before they have. You know, this kind of, well, it's evil.
It's evil.
It's a satanic atmosphere.
Killing a child because you fear he might become a bad adult.
Yeah, well, this is...
Who the hell does that? Who articulates that thought process?
Well, the people who last did so, on a mass basis, are the people who murdered 6 million Jews and tens of millions of others, including tens of millions of Russians. And we know who they are. And it's the abused becoming the abuser. And it belongs in mental health territory, I'm sure about that. And to see Donald Trump talk about making it a real estate gain, you know, Trump Towers, condominiums, casinos, on the bones of hundreds of thousands of people.
That reminds me, my producers just told me to take a look at this. They just sent me something. Apparently, Mr. Trump is at the UN, and he just gave a speech. He said China and India, quoting here, China and India are the primary funders of the war in Ukraine, as they still purchase Russian oil, but NATO countries are also purchasing Russian oil. The U.S. is now fully prepared to impose a full round of powerful tariffs to stop this. And this is the key word that I wanted to play off of, bloodshed, says my president, Mr. Trump. As I hear those words, I'm thinking to myself, we all look at the war in Ukraine. It's a horrible war. I wish it would stop. Nobody's for war. No war is
Absolutely.
Good. But there is a huge comparison point or two when you look at Gaza and you look at the war in Ukraine. One is a war. The war in Ukraine is a war being fought by soldiers from Ukraine and other places against soldiers from Russia and other places. Civilian deaths so far, last count, 13,000 civilian deaths. And by the way, that's civilians who've died on both sides, right? Now let's compare that to what is a real grudge match.
Yeah.
The point I'm making is, George, and I think you know this, and if you don't, please disagree. It seems to me the war in Ukraine is a war between two governments who are sending their armies at each other as opposed to sending their people at each other. Mm-hmm. I don't get a sense that Russians and Ukrainians hate each other. Mm-hmm. They don't. Mm-hmm. I do get a sense that in Gaza and in Israel, there is a grudge match, a real hatred going on.
Sure, if Russia were behaving like Netanyahu is behaving with American money, material, weapons, and diplomatic support, Kiev would look like Gaza. And the war would have ended a very long time ago.
Yes.
Wouldn't have got past a fortnight or 4 weeks. But because Russia isn't behaving like that, the whole thing has dragged on for very much longer. And to talk about bloodshed when you are the person
Yes. Who's
giving the bombs and the missiles and allowing the starvation, we haven't mentioned this, there is a biblical famine in Gaza. Mm. And it is being conducted by a country that has the apparently never-ending support of the United States and Europe, of course, though that is beginning to change now.
Do you think so, really?
Well, the European public opinion
Yes. Is
highly inflamed. In Italy, they're on strike. The mm-hmm. workers are on strike to stop the supply of Italian goods to Israel. That's how deep it's gone. And in the announcements yesterday by France, by Britain, by Australia, by Canada, these are all reflections of the rising tide of public opinion in these countries. Mm. They might not add up to a row of beans. We'll see. But the fact that our governments in Europe are now having to distance themselves from Israel is a product of the fact that in every country, including in the United States, most people are not on Israel's side in this.
Right.
And I don't think that's ever going to change now. There's no going back from that. And so we are now in a new era where it's America and Israel against the world.
But I heard you say 2 days ago on your show that although the lip service is correct with Canada, the UK, Australia, and others now coming on board and wanting to recognize Palestine, et cetera, in the end, they're still not doing what needs to be done to stop Israel from doing what it's doing.
They're still giving them weapons.
Correct.
Never mind trading with them on favorable terms. Israel's in the Eurovision Song Contest. Intervision was much better. Intervision was Eurovision without the perverts and without the Israelis. Football.
So how can you be against them if you're helping them? My question is.
Quite. And that's a question they're going to have to answer even in their own domestic courts now, because we'll be able to go to the British courts and say, we recognized Palestine, but we're giving weapons to a country that is attacking the very country we just recognized. Mm. That's going to be much more difficult now for the British government to weasel out of. So it's a step forward. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient. We need to go far farther. But it's having its impact on Netanyahu, hence his Super Sparta speech a week or so ago, that we have to get used to the fact that we'll be out of everything. The UEFA, the European Football Association, is about to kick Israel out. Mm. No more Israeli clubs in European football competition. You may well ask why there ever was. Yeah. It's not in Europe. But these things are now ratcheting up.
Did you see that video? I think it came out yesterday or the day before, of the Israeli team, the soccer team, the football team, soccer as we call it in America, coming out of the field. All the fans turned around and turned their backs. And then the coach of the Italian team started screaming at them before the match, saying that they were butchers. And then, by the way, they proceeded to kick their ass. But, you know, I've never seen something like that in a sporting event where the athletes.
I've been in this cause for 50 years.
Yeah.
Don't tell the wife, she thinks I'm 45. 50 years I've been in the Palestinian. Now, in the beginning, you could have fitted all of us into this studio. It's a big studio, but you could have fitted everybody in Britain that thought like me into this studio. Now it's everybody. Yeah. Now, only the real knuckle draggers are continuing to support Netanyahu and Israel. And I don't believe it's ever going to change. Mm. It's no more.
But what can it lead to?
Confident moment.
Okay, but if it doesn't change and it continues and it just gets worse, until the United States says we've had enough, I don't see a change in terms of their behavior. Do you?
Your Congress is bought and paid for by the Israel lobby. Everybody knows that. They don't even make a They don't even try and disguise it. There's people whose names I've never heard from places I've never heard of getting seven-figure sums from the Israel lobby. So bought and paid for.
Or becoming FBI directors or CIA directors.
Yes, quite. And so until that changes, you're right. It's going to be Israel and America against the world. But that's not a good place for America to be. Why would America want to be in that place for a country of 8 million people on the Mediterranean? How is that in your interests? If you really believe in making America great again, if you really believe in America first, eventually it's got to dawn on legislators, certainly has dawned already on their voters, that we have to stop digging deeper and deeper and deeper into this rabbit hole. And I believe that that will happen. I know America is not a perfect democracy. Nowhere is.
Yeah.
But no government can forever fly in the face of the sincerely held opinion of its people. And I don't believe yours will either.
As a typical American, I remember when I first started working out of Washington at RT, and you and Richard Wolff, I had you on regularly, and you're the guys who turned me on to this whole Global South thing. You're the guys who even taught me the meaning of the word BRICS, because at the time, I, like most Americans even today, think brick is something you make your house with. But since I've been here, I've been looking into this a lot, created a lot of relationships with Indian reporters and Indian newsmakers. I just traveled to Beijing. I was there for the big summit. And I'm really captivated by the unity of all of these countries that have come together to forge this thing. I watched and had the Indian ambassador here, and when I asked him what he was going to do when it was a hot story about these new 50% tariffs, he said, we're going to do what's right for the people of India.
Yeah.
Damn the United States.
Yeah.
This is something interesting I've never seen happening in my lifetime, George.
No, the colonial hangover was long, but even the worst hangover, I understand, you eventually recover from. And that colonial hangover is definitely at an end now. In countries like India, where they were openly threatened by Donald Trump and they headed for Beijing, their traditional adversary, foe. They preferred Beijing to kowtowing to Donald Trump. And that's now true throughout the global South. It's why, if Venezuela, for example, God forbid, is attacked by Donald Trump, the whole of the global South and the vast majority of people in Latin America, whatever their governments think, will be with Venezuela because, well, mad as hell and not going to put up with it anymore, as a famous broadcaster once said in a famous movie. And that's exactly where we are now. And it's, you see, in the past, it was incoherent. There was no Soviet Union. China hadn't really arrived.
Yeah.
There was no alternative. Now there's an alternative. The Eurasian landmass. And as Elon Musk said when he was here with me a few months ago, Moscow is the new Rome. And you and I like Rome.
Yeah.
And the new Rome is gleaming by comparison with our cities and by comparison with our societies. You just have to walk out of this studio and see that.
It's amazing.
It's a truly amazing, united, peaceful country where you're not looking over your shoulder, somebody's going to mug you, whatever time of the night it is. And this is noticed by the people of the world. They see China. Look at that parade you were at.
Yeah.
How impeccable it was.
Now,
I come from a country that's not bad at ceremony.
And pomp.
Your ceremony for Donald Trump's birthday.
Not so good.
Let's draw a veil over that. We don't want to embarrass the Americans. But the Chinese choreography, precision, and weaponry.
It's unbelievable.
Anybody who said at the end of that parade, I think we might have to go to war with China, really ought to be in Ward 5 of the psychiatric hospital.
Yeah, no, China's coming on. I worry about, you know, the country that my wife and I spent our honeymoon in. I've told you about Suzanne and I when we got married. We went to 100 years ago or whatever. We went to Stratford-upon-Avon. And, you know, my whole life has been English literature and Shakespeare. And I'm saddened by what I'm seeing and what I hear you say, you know, when you're very objective about it, that you fear for some of the policies in your country that are leaving the people out, right?
The British government of Keir Starmer is the most unpopular government that Britain has ever had.
23%.
I have lived through. Well, that was the percentage of the votes cast. If you factor in the people who didn't vote at all and now look at the approval rating, Starmer is on 11%. He's proposing to take a country into war, potentially, with a nuclear superpower, with 11%
public approval. That's crazy. Crazy.
Utterly crazy. And, you know, I've known a lot of prime ministers. I've known a lot of really unpopular prime ministers, yeah. Margaret Thatcher, Tony Blair, to name but two. But there's never been a phenomenon of a prime minister who is virtually unanimously hated in the country, 90% nearly of the public against him. And that's because the British people are not fools. They can see the country around them falling apart at the seams. They can see the division. They can see the sense of insecurity. They can see a sense of hopelessness. You know, my parents, I mean, I grew up in the only period there has ever been in British history of social security, safety net, welfare state, free health, free education, and so on. Didn't last long, but it was a glorious time to be British. The Beatles were there. Carnaby Street was there.
Where'd you grow up?
In Scotland.
In Scotland.
But our whole country, we were a bit of a backwater. But you watched London, swinging London on the television. You saw James Bond, Sean Connery. You felt that you were in a country that was worthy of you being proud of it. Nobody feels that way anymore.
I kind of felt, I'm going to say this, and I apologize if you're insulted. I know it's your country. But the other day when I saw the king with Mr. Trump and that whole thing, I kind of felt sorry for all the players there. Yeah. It wasn't the England that I had in my mind that I would always look and say, wow, how regal, how perfect, how, you know, everything is well manicured. And it's kind of like how you felt about our parade in Washington.
Yes. You're absolutely right.
It wasn't like the Queen's.
The era of the late Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth has well and truly passed.
Yeah.
And everything suddenly seems third rate compared to that. If you watch the Netflix series The Crown, you saw the pomp and majesty.
Loved it.
But that's all gone now.
Yeah.
We have a moth-eaten king. We have a hated, reviled prime minister.
Yeah.
His ministers are either complete unknowns or they're known enough themselves to be hated. And nothing works, Rick. The police don't work. The courts don't work. The media doesn't work. The civil service doesn't work. The transportation system doesn't
work. And I know you're pulling for him because, you know, it's your country. Like, I'm pulling for, you know, the world, for this country, for my country, for the UK. But they're kind of their own worst enemies, aren't they?
For sure. The choices that Britain has made have taken us down this road. We Brexited. You and I used to talk about it every night.
Yeah.
We Brexited from the European Union. We could have seized that moment to set an independent course in the world, to sail forth, making friends with everyone who would be friends with us. No automatic enemies because someone else has got them as an enemy. Mm-hmm. We could have been truly independent. And that's why I fought for Brexit. But we have, in fact, shadowed the European Union deep into the darkness. And we are now at war with the Donald Trump administration. Imagine, the Europeans want war. The American government, in Ukraine at least, wants peace. You know, I grew up in a time where end US wars was our slogan.
Yeah.
Now it's the Europeans, social democrats.
It's weird.
So-called leftists.
Why?
Who want wars, and Donald Trump, who wants peace, at least in Ukraine.
Yeah, you saw that story I reported a little while ago. Like, the Europeans discovered that there were a couple of drones that may have crossed a line somewhere, and they're all excited, ready to start World War III. It could be nothing.
Of course.
I mean, it could be something, and if it's something, it should be investigated.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
But it just seems
they don't bear examination because they usually turn out to be what we known now as false flags.
Right.
But you're right. It's like they're itching to get to war with a nuclear-armed superpower, which war would last metaphorically 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Whatever the length of time for hypersonic missiles to leave Kaliningrad and land in London, Birmingham, Manchester, and Glasgow, turning the entire island into ash, that's the amount of time the war would last.
Mm.
How can you want that?
Right.
How can you be pursuing a course that might lead to that? That's what is simply bamboozling about the British course. The British have an ancient hatred of Russia. You may not have grasped that fully yet because it isn't reciprocated. The Russians don't hate the British.
No.
But the British hate the Russians.
I know.
Goes back to Crimea, goes back to supposed imperial rivalry. It predated the Bolsheviks. It has post-dated the Yeltsin-Putin era. And it shows no sign of coming to an end. If you want a cheap clickbait, just say something bad about Russia.
I know.
It'll go, it'll go viral.
And all you have to say is whoever's talking is just a Putin apologist. That's all he is.
Yeah.
Or she is or something. Yeah. My producers have just told me that we've been talking for an hour. It seemed like we've been doing 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah,
I could go forever with you, my friend. I think the world of
Let's
you, and I'm so grateful.
Sometime.
That God you've come by and spent some time with me. That... Last time you were here, I got sick, and I didn't get a chance to really dig deep into conversations like you and I like to do. So it's so nice to see you this time.
And you.
I really
God
like you.
God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you. Let's keep doing this from time to time.
Absolutely.
And keep up the great work. Your podcast is fantastic.
Thank you
And
so
for
much.
Anybody who hasn't checked it out, please do so.
Mother of all talk shows.
The mother of all talk shows. And that's how he says it, too. That's it for us. Thank you so much for being a part of this. You know, I have a little podcast, too. It's called Journalistically Speaking. Doing pretty good. And on X, my goodness, the conversations that we've been having lately have been very good. We'll leave it at that. And certainly a lot of people are joining in. Thank you so much for being a part of this show. And thank you, seriously, for letting us into your homes. And we'll catch you next time. God bless.